Milton Friedman wants me to call myself a liberal, and Father Parry and Bill Fitzpatrick want me to call myself a thought, but I will stick to the word conservative for the time being. As a matter of fact, in a very peculiarly parallel manner, Father Parry has already stolen part of what I want to say, but said it differently, so I hope you won't be bothered by the repetition. I want to talk about two things fundamentally. Because the first is necessary in order to say what I mean when I speak of a new stage of conservative thought. We've seen tonight Milton Friedman calling himself a liberal, and Father Parry, who was thinking in, shall we say, more traditionalist terms, or has been thought to think in those terms, who calls on traditional backgrounds to face the present, nevertheless saying things which paralleled each other in a much closer way than could have been the case a few years ago. Most of you are familiar with the position on these matters that I have been propounding concerning contemporary American conservatism and its mode of thought. Perhaps that would be better than conservative thought. Position which Brent Bozell has given the inelegant and hideous name of fusionism in the pages of National Review. To summarize that position, only briefly, therefore, but I must summarize it to come to what I want to say. It has been my contention, first, that contemporary American conservatism represents, in the first place, the heir of Western tradition in the American scene, and that as such, it has been a blending of two lines of thought. Now, this is a blending that in practice is observable. It's empirically there. One that emphasizes at one and the same time tradition and the pursuit of virtue and value as the end of man, tradition as the on the one hand, and virtue as the end of man's existence on the other. And another stream that emphasizes the use of reason and the primacy of freedom as the necessary precondition of virtue. I've called that a libertarian trend in the first, a traditionalist one. Milton Friedman has called it tonight a liberal one in the true sense of the word. That second stream stresses that since freedom is a necessary precondition of man being what he can be, of the search for virtue, it is a primary end in the political process. The second point in this position I have been putting forward is that this blending is not only empirically observable as the main aspect of the thought of contemporary American conservatives, but it is theoretically defensible as the highest expression of Western capitalism. And thirdly, that therefore, it must be emphasized that the mode of thought of contemporary American conservatism is not derived from 19th century European conservatism any more than it is from 19th century European liberalism, though it includes elements similar to both and rejects aspects of each. It takes its emphasis on tradition and man's end from the stream of conservatism. It takes its emphasis on the use of reason and freedom from liberalism, rejecting, on the one hand, the utilitarian philosophical foundation of 19th century liberalism, and on the other hand, the authoritarianism of 19th century conservatism. But, fourthly, and finally in my sketch of my position, I may have maintained that contemporary American conservatism is not, in its essence, simply a blend of 19th century conservatism and 19th century liberalism, but fundamentally goes around behind that whole 19th century discussion and takes its foundation on the American constitutional consensus of the late 18th century, which avoided the European split, and which took what had always been the case of Western civilization at its best, a tension, a balance between tradition and freedom, and raised it to the highest political forms in the history of this civilization. the first form fully reflecting this, the essentially Christian tension of the West on the political arena. This is only a sketch of the position. What I want primarily to discuss today is something of where we stand at this moment, because I believe that, not that what I have been pressing has been accepted, but I do believe, and I believe both Milton Friedman's remarks and Father Parry's here and a great deal of the discussion that's been going on have shown that there has been an understanding on the libertarian and traditionalist sides that were not the case 8 or 9 years ago, and there has been a certain working out of these points, but they have not been deeply developed. There's been some excellent discussion over these years of these issues, many of them by people here, by Russell Kirk, by Brent Bozell, by Father Parry, by Milton Friedman, by others. But, and this is my central point, and this is where I seem to be stealing from Father Parry, who obviously stole from me by telepathy. All of us, I think, have failed to develop this discussion further in the past couple of years in particular. It has kind of gotten stuck at a stage of a series of positions which were promising, but which have not brought forth the depth of discussion which one hoped for a couple of years ago. And this is, I think, symptomatic of a general problem of the entire American conservative movement, and most particularly of conservative intellectuals, of us gathered here. The problem is simply this. Considering the growth of conservatism these last few years, I would maintain that we exhibit and have been exhibiting a lamentable intellectual thinness. We have not deepened our understanding. We have not deepened it in the only way men living in a given age can do, by developing our philosophical position in the terms that the life of that age presents us with. Eliseo Vivas has been the first to signalize this in his article in Modern Age last spring, article called The Conservative Demonology, but the central point of which seems to me to be exactly the one that I'm trying to make here. Though I disagree with him on some of the examples he gives as to what kind of thinking is necessary, I am in the most profound agreement, and have become so more and more in the past few months, with what he is saying is essentially true and of the most vital importance to us. We content ourselves with belaboring the liberal establishment from fixed positions, but we have not anywhere sufficiently seriously. There are exceptions, of course there are exceptions, and fine ones. My collaborators on this program, Father Parry's discussion of the prophetic age and of the need of prophecy in modern age, Milton Friedman's discussions of the relationships of the free market to the questions of freedom in general, many others, but they are exceptions. We have not, by and large, sufficiently seriously moved out of our snug fortifications with our neat slogans and theoretical formulations and grappled with theory and reality. Not parodies of scholarship like the Veritas Fabianism theory that takes the complex development of American liberalism and reduces it to a series of simple slogans. Not that kind of pseudo-scholarship. I mean really digging in and seeing the world in life, not trying to explain it away with a series of attitudes which will enable you to ride glibly over the surfaces of it. I could give dozens of examples of the kind of problem we need to deal with intellectually. They swarm around us. And I may say in passing, and this is relevant to what Father Parry said about truth as distinguished from party labels, that I see more and more signs in the scholarly establishment generally, and outside of our ranks, of a willingness seriously to begin to grapple with problems on a non-ritualistic basis. A number of books have come my way, a number of articles in the journals that show that there's a breaking of the ice of the establishment in terms of ritualistic liberalism, a breaking of the ice that has not sufficiently been reflected in our own ranks in the very terms that Father Parry was speaking of. I say that there are dozens of examples of the kind of problem we need to deal with intellectually. Well, I can give here only a few to give an idea of what I'm talking about. Two new ones have been proposed here tonight. Most important problems that require the most thorough thought, and curiously enough, proposed by Milton Friedman and Father Parry in totally different words, but they're the same problem. If my notes are correct, Milton Friedman said, we must seriously consider the kinds of order which will make possible a freedom. The conditions of the kinds of order which make freedom possible. And Father Parry said we must seriously reconsider the principle of organization of our society. And I believe that looked at from different points of view, this is the same problem and not one we have given attention to. Or just taking problems at random. There is the whole problem of the relation of the conscious to the unconscious, which is available as a philosophical and psychological and even sociological problem as a result of the work of the last 70 years or so. This cannot be handled by simply dismissing or sneering at Freud in the one-dimensional manner of a book like LaPierre's book on Freudianism, which is a disgrace theoretically to the conservative movement, that we tackle things like that and that things like that become popular among us and among our intellectuals. I happen to be in strong disagreement with Freud's philosophical view and therefore with much of the body of his work. But it needs to be grappled with. If he is wrong, it needs to be shown why and where. And the empirical evidence and the theoretical developments and the approach made to it need to be handled on their own merits and in their own terms and not by a simple, glib dismissal. Or take the philosophical problems involved in the population growth of the world at this point needs handling, discussion, consideration, not with shearing away with Kant about we can always feed people and so on and so forth, but consider from the point of view of a conservative what a world heavily populated will mean, not in terms of whether you can feed it or not, but in terms of the very privacy that makes individual life worth living. These are problems we have to consider and not say, oh, that's the kind of thing the liberals are raising, let's not think about them. Or the whole problem of the American Negro. Facing that problem neither with the sentimentality which is current Kant today, nor with evasion of the basic problems involved in a people who have never produced a civilization existing as one-tenth of the population of a country which is one of the highest products of one of the highest civilizations in the world. Really get down to and stop being afraid to consider reality. On both its sides, on the sides of the dignity of all individual human beings and on the side of the necessity of maintaining a civilization, and grapple with it. Or the problems raised by, in terms of our view of man, which I would maintain we hold pretty jointly in this room, but hold it in general, the problems raised in connection with our view of man by the cybernetic revolution and the genetic revolution of the last 20 years or so. There's more good conservative thought. Father Parry will allow me the word. By conservative thought, I mean the thought of people who in this day are concerned with the heritage of Western civilization. There's more good conservative thought among half a dozen, on this problem, among half a dozen science fiction writers I know, than there is in the whole conservative movement. And I'm not laughing at these science fiction writers. They are trying to deal with real problems and in a deep sense. Or on the problems of peace and war. I'm not talking about what do we do tomorrow in Vietnam. There are two major problems of peace and war. One is the problem of the morality of war in a nuclear age. There have been, I can count two, the pieces which I think have dug into that question. One is Wilmore Kendall's piece which was part of a debate he delivered some years ago in Stanford. The other was a recent piece by Fritz Willemsen in a National Review. I don't feel that either of them have solved the problem, but I feel they've at least taken it seriously and worked upon it seriously. The whole problem of the morality of war in an age such as this needs discussion to justify the position which we are taking and which we have been taking as a practical matter. Or another problem of peace and war, how in an age of a continuing state of war against a hostile civilization, against a barbarism determined against civilization, can we at one and the same time carry out our responsibilities to the defense of our country and of Western civilization, and at the same time preserve freedom at home? There are plenty of people who can write about the details of strategy. nuclear strategy, alliance strategy, the rest of it, and plenty of people who are writing about free enterprise and the conditions of preserving it. But I have yet to see, with a single exception of Stefan Pessoni's piece in my book, What is Conservatism?, an effort to grapple with the questions of how you defend a free society at the same time as you maintain a free society, and what is to be done concretely in such circumstances and what the principles are. Or the very basic problem arising out of the libertarian traditionalist question, which I raised earlier and which we have discussed to some degree, but that aspect of it which is more profound and deeper and is relevant to the whole history of our civilization this past 400 or 500 years, that aspect of it which is perhaps, if my judgment here is correct, the one that most needs solving if Western civilization is to stop its headlong flight to suicide. And that is, if I may put it briefly, the question that arose, and what its solutions are, when what I might call the adventurous side, the striving side of the West, the side of reason and freedom, if you wish, broke loose from the guide of tradition and of the need of the search for virtue, and went further and further apart from it through the successive stages of Renaissance, Enlightenment, the French Revolution, the liberal and communist revolutions, and so forth, while on the other side of Western civilization, which stood for tradition and for the pursuit of virtue, hardened and fossilized itself so that it was contributing no more to the preservation of a living civilization than was the wild, adventurous, governorless side. You don't solve those problems by writing simple books like Bread Balls on the Enlightenment that tries to make a curse word out of the word enlightenment. You solve it by getting down to studying the problems and conditions and what it means that have created this and what it means in our time and what we can do to reunite and reheal Western civilization on a historical and philosophical basis. There are a dozen problems. There are dozens of problems, not a dozen. I fear we have not been meeting them. That may also be one of the reasons why this afternoon I felt so very strongly that while, on the one hand, it is true that, as someone said, that a weakness of the recent presidential election was that we did not have the programmatic material on questions such as the farm policy or unemployment or what have you. I think this is correct. They have not been worked out properly. That nevertheless, is not the primary function of a gathering such as this, is not the primary function facing American intellectuals who call themselves conservatives today, though it has to be done. It's vitally important. But I don't think it's going to be done on that level properly unless we're moving on the higher level as well, moving to try to take the basic conservative philosophical position, which I still prefer to call it, with all due courtesy to Milton Friedman and Father Parry, I think it neither is liberal the word liberal has unfortunately been stolen from us and we can't get it back, and I think it is correct to speak of conservatism as standing for something today, if for nothing else than, and here I don't disagree at all with the content of what Father Parry said, nothing else than the struggle to recover the foundations of Western civilization. But that position has reached a point at which it has to enter a new stage, at which it has to move forward. It has to deepen itself, or our pretensions become a lot of nonsense and rubbish. Conservative movement perhaps had an excuse once upon a time. A dozen years or so ago, it lived in a ghetto when a tiny minority against the entire liberal establishment and against the established attitudes intellectually of decades stood looming over it. It perhaps was for a period of years necessary to harden and to assert first principles again and again and again, to sharpen out some of them, to make clear what some of our differences among ourselves were and how they could be reconciled. But there have been years of development since. Last year, we were strong enough to strike for power in this country. However fundamentally right we are, in broad terms, The fact of the matter is we don't deserve to achieve power as a movement on the only moral basis we have for achieving it for any other reason than power for power's sake. And that reason is that we are the heirs of Western civilization, and until we prove that we are the heirs of Western civilization, we do not deserve and we will not deserve to win it, and we will not prove it all down the line until we prove it in our deeds all down the line, and not least of all, perhaps first of all, in our intellectual deeds. That's what I hope this society will help us perform.